If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine love and beauty of the beloved. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. So our seminar topic this evening is cultivating and expanding your aura of influence. So let's start with an integration and take a deep breath and ride that energy down from the very heart of the beloved right down through your body, integrating, infusing, and aligning all levels of your being with your own perfect wholeness. And before we get very far into this evening, I'm going to do a little exercise with you so that you can see for yourself what we're talking about. And what we're speaking of is the aura of influence that you wear, that literally is your presence. And without further ado, let's just get into it. First of all, we always ask for the clearance that whatever is for the highest and best good for you this evening, and each one of you individually, will be aligned and on purpose for you. And that which is revealed to you serves you in some way that enhances the quality of your life. We ask for perfect protection through the office of the Christ and the order of Melchizedek and the spiritual lineages that foster and guide you in this incarnation. And into your hands, O Lord, we commend our spirits and this evening and this teaching. May it be anointed and blessed by your loving. So we're going to walk into a temple on the inner realms. This is a place probably you've all visited at some time. It's one that's familiar to all of you. I think you'll recognize it once we get in there. And see yourself walking down the corridor with your brothers and sisters, your friends, your companions on this soul journey. The masters are walking beside you. And you each enter into a room in which you are alone with your master teacher, and there's a large viewing screen. Actually, it looks more like a mirror because it has a reflective quality. And see yourself standing as an outline without physical definition, just kind of a outline of your physical form. And I want you to focus on the energy around that form of yourself that is showing up right now. Receive a sense of impression. I'm not going to tell you what you're seeing. I would like you to practice seeing. And you'll see in different ways. Some of you will have a clairvoyancy within the mind that will present imagery or pictures. others of you will have a sense of energy or just an inner intuitive knowing. It doesn't matter how you receive information. You just look and see what's there and receive however you receive. Scan the energy that appears around the outline of your form. You might want to look for anything that attracts your attention. Notice the color, the shapes, the overall radiation. And tell yourself that you will remember and imprint what you're seeing so that you can record it in your journal and return to this exercise anytime you want to look at your aura. You have every right to see yourself and all the training that we receive in the mystery schools. In the beginning, has to do with knowing the self, all dimensions of your self. So, what does this energy field around yourself convey to you overall? Just notice what that is. And if there's anything that you would like to have worked with during this seminar this evening, why don't you ask right now the master that's standing beside you to assist you? And just let that image be released now. And we're going to do an aura cleansing. This is a very simple one. Just take a deep breath and see a golden stream of light riding down through the top of your head and flushing through your aura. And this next one, as you take a deep breath, see it as a cleansing light and breathe it in as you inhale, and as you exhale, see anything that you need to release flowing out of your mouth with your exhalation. Deep breath. Golden light. Exhale anything that needs to be released. And as it's released, just see it transmute into golden light. Take another deep breath and breathe in that golden divine energy all the way through your body and exhale anything that you want to release, seeing it transmute into golden light. And this is a wonderful healing practice that you can do anytime that you want to have a divine infusion of your own soul nature. I find that the golden light is particularly helpful to relieve pain. I'm not sure exactly why, but in working with myself, I find it works better than almost any other color. I also use the violet flame a lot if I feel like I need to do some really dramatic transmutation of a state of consciousness or an energy pattern that I feel like maybe I'm clogged with. So you can do that. Let's take a deep breath and do a violet flame breath, okay? Deep breath. And breathe that violet flame down through your body. Transmute, transmute, transmute. Anything that needs to be transmuted. transmuted and transformed and alchemically cleared. So we are looking at building, cultivating, and expanding your aura of influence. What I've noticed in every advanced spiritual person that I've met is that they're noticed without in any way trying to attract attention to themselves. In fact, even though they can appear quite ordinary outwardly, they'll always have a powerful, attractive effect. Even simply walking through a room, they will somehow turn everyone's attention in some form. When such a person speaks, they command attention immediately. And their simplest words can convey a memorable influence. That's when that presence and that voice carries divine infusion. When you're filled with the divine presence, you transcend the appearance in time-space, and manifest as something that is beyond usual comprehension. We, as God-realizing, enlightening beings, need to train ourselves to always be on the lookout for the divine. We need to practice divine seership. So that ultimately, that's all we notice as we move about with people in the world. Because what you notice in another, not only do you influence them to actualize, even subconsciously, we always rise to the level of the highest expectations that are held towards us, but it also increases the same quality within ourselves. Because what you give to another, you immediately receive yourself. That's why you want to give your best vision, your best seership, in investing into promoting the divinity in your fellow man, in the world, and in yourself. So, that authenticity comes from congruency when that divine auric presence doesn't have leaks and holes and dichotomies and confusions and negative patterns and judging and critiquing. All of those things are what rob us of a genuine, powerful presence. You know, the difference between Jesus the Christ and most of us is that the only thing in Jesus was the presence of the Father, Mother, God. It wasn't anything else. And with us, we have a little mixture of the personality, the lower self, the judgments and the doubts and the confusions of the lower consciousness. That's the only difference. So as we work with these processes that we bring forward each seminar, we find that we're fine-tuning and building in more of a congruency between what we feel within our hearts and what comes out of our mouths and into our minds and through our daily expression as we go about the world. We're in a time in which we have to practice the yoga of cultivating the divine presence all the time. It has to be our daily practice. Very few of us have the time and the leisure to devote to long periods of time of meditation. That's why we need to be meditating through witnessing, being in the witnessing observational mode as we move through our life. We have to become more consciously aware and alert to what we are engaging and responding from, and what's coming out of us in terms of our quality of energy as we move through the day. This is our yoga of being present here and now, watching, witnessing, observing, and not critiquing. The critiquing and judging and mental self-talk is that part that we call the lower mind or the ego consciousness that always wants to feather its own betterment and its own nest by bringing down another. So all of those put down, negating thoughts that you put out, those need to be nipped in the bud. And the focus needs to be brought immediately to that objective observer that has no opinion, that has no need to critique or compare, or in any way talk about what is being seen. Learn to keep your mind at rest and enjoy the scenery. I'm certain that you don't have time to judge when you're looking out of a fast-moving train. You're just observing very passively the scenery. You might be riveted by the beauty, and that's a good thing. Because one of the first things you notice when you start to awaken and come alive spiritually and have any form of divine connection is an enhanced sense of beauty. Suddenly, you become aware of the beauty of your surroundings in a way that you didn't have before. It's like everything becomes very clear, and you notice things it's as if you had never seen them before. Like you're looking through eyes in which the veil has been removed. So every time you have that enhanced sense of beauty, it means that you have connected in some way with God. One of the names of God is Sundara, which means beautiful. It's the beauty. So beauty and God are one and the same thing. The path of beauty is the path of the mystic. The mystic is looking for the beauty of the divine beloved in everything he or she sees. And they raise their vibrations through this exalted state of simply witnessing the beauty of the beloved. So when you are aware of a heightened sense of beauty, take a deep breath and breathe it in. Breathe it in as if you were absorbing and quaffing elixir of life, which you truly are. This is the Amrita of immortality. This is what will absolutely transfigure and bring you into a state of divinity where everything else falls away and you are absorbed in the beloved. This simple path of beauty and drinking the beauty and absorbing the beauty and looking for the divine beauty, that in itself can be your yoga. That in itself can be your spiritual practice. You don't have to do all of them. It doesn't take all of the matches in the matchbook to light a fire. One match will do. And every teaching is like a match to ignite that divine illumination. And bring it from the dormant, latent state into active expression, like a living fire within you. And it is a fire of beauty. And with beauty, you'll notice you'll feel an enhanced sense of love. Love and beauty come side by side. You can't possibly see beauty out of a negative state of consciousness, because a negative state of consciousness closes off the awareness of the divine. So you have to sacrifice that lesser to receive the greater. And it's a very good thing to sacrifice the things that lower your vibration and make you only aware of the ugly elements of life. So let that go. And be a sleuth, you know, like a Sherlock Holmes with a magnifying glass on the search for every little bit of beauty you can possibly find. Look for that which is light and bright, which captivates your attention because divinity always has luminosity. Because remember, God is light. Light in which there is neither shadow nor turning. That means it is Ein Sof Or. It is the light that never is extinguished and is never diminished. No matter how far it expands, it remains the same, ever full, ever whole, ever luminous. So when you look for the light and the luminosity in yourself, in the face of another, in your eyes, get a mirror sometime and just sit and look deeply into the wellsprings of glory in which your soul is looking forth through you. Those are your eyes. They are dimensional portals into infinity, into the very heart of God. So don't be afraid to look for the light in your own eyes. It is the light of God within you. It is the love of God. It is the power of God. It is the ever-expanding aura of influence that eventually will render you an immortal being of pure light. There won't be anything else but the light of the divine in you. That is the ultimate destiny of every single soul. Every one of us is marked for this ultimate destiny. Some of you in this lifetime, some of you maybe in the next moment, but all of you soon, very soon. So this is what we are working to bring more and more present as what we're striving towards each day, so that every moment of every day becomes the yoga in which we attain more of this infusion of beauty and light and loving into our energy field. So people who have cultivated an expanded field of influence are people who consistently find ways to connect with God. Be aware that the only source of energy, okay, no qualification here, the only source of energy, real energy, sustainable energy, is your connection with the divine. All other things that you do to bring energy in come through a form of secondary reflection and are easily drained. For example, we eat food, don't we? That is one way of taking in secondary energy. But we also know of masters that live by their breath, that just are sustained by prana. We also know masters that don't even need to do that. They are simply sustained by an inner form of light attunement that nourishes them and breathes them in a way that's non-perceptible. That's why some yogis can be buried for thousands of years under the ground and be exhumed, as it were, and breathed back into the present life. For example, Sai Baba took some of his college boys one day out into a deep area of a remote forest and instructed them to start digging at the base of this tree. After they had dug some distance, he said, now very carefully, began to push the soil back only with your hands, no more shovels. There. You see the top knot of this great yogi is starting to show. And sure enough, they kept moving the soil away until there was a yogi in sacred repose in Padmasana and sitting there, and he had been there for thousands of years, I believe since the time of Lord Krishna. And he was destined to be awakened by Lord Sai Baba in his avataric appearance. So that is but one of many, many examples that you'll find in the ancient Vedic scriptures of saints and sages that neither had to breathe nor eat to be immortal, to live an immortalized life. So they were beings who had become only light, only divine energy, and consciousness, and so they didn't have to import anything external to themselves to sustain themselves. Gradually, as we progress in the importing of higher degrees of energy in the body, things that are more and more necessary begin of their own nature to fall aside. You really don't have to renounce things. They fall away when they have become obsolete. And that applies to everything. And there are no shoulds here. They fall away in their own way, in their own timing. And it's interesting because when these things fall away that you think you have to build in energy, you find that you have mastered also all of the elements of nature. For example, Neem Karoli Baba, the guru of Ram Dass, was able to consume all of the LSD that Ram Dass had brought in his little satchel, all of his dope, everything that he had brought, Neem Karoli Baba, Maharshi? Well, anyway, Neem Karoli Baba said, bring it, bring it. And he consumed all of it, and it didn't affect him at all. Likewise, Jesus Christ was able to take upon himself all of the karmic error and sins of Adamic man, all of the poisons, and transmute them and absolve them completely. He became the scapegoat that consumed all of that error and erased it and blotted it off of the record. I think probably he took all of the aberrations of Atlantis at that time, which is why we are able to ascend now and return back to our divine estate. So this is what the power of an expanded field of energy that a master, an adept, the Son of God, the Mahapurushas and sages are able to do for humanity. For example, when Jesus or the spiritual travelers or one of the masters say, I am always with you, what does that mean? It means that the disciple becomes enwrapped, enfolded, enmantled, subsumed within the auric field of their master. And they are literally in the presence of the master 24/7. There is no way that that master allows them to escape. We have many stories in the Bible and in the Vedas and in many of the sacred scriptures of the world that show again and again how the master is always with you and you are always with the master. The difference between a committed disciple who has become one with the master is that they are always aware of being with the master. That master never leaves their attention. Just like when you're in love, you never forget that person you're in love with. It's that way, but even deeper in the relationship between a master and their disciple. Now, a disciple, let's say an aspirant that hasn't yet developed that full devotion and surrender to the master, they're kind of on the periphery of that. They're still within the aura of the master, but they have to do more purification before they're aware of that proximity and before they're really drawn into oneness with the master. Because when you are one with God, one with the master, everything becomes homogenized and you become part of the like Jesus becomes the bridegroom for all of the bride of Christ, which is all souls, all human souls. He becomes the good shepherd of all the sheep. Or in the metaphor with Sri Krishna, he becomes Gopala. Go means cow, so he is the master herdsman of all the cows and calves, which means all of the souls, again, the embodied beings. He becomes, again, the good shepherd, just like Jesus, same metaphor. So likewise, as we develop spiritually, we also begin to form in our auric field those, let's say, souls that look to us as a source of light. because all of us are destined to manifest as master souls at some point in some way, and we will all have realms of influence or ashrams, energetic affiliates, that will form around our particular radiance as a divine being. This is, again, another principle that is enacted, whether you are a human being or an avatar or a logos of a planet or a sun, which in that case will attract other planets into its orbit in the case of a sun. So you have realms of influence that attract to you, like a magnet, those that are on a wavelength that is the best for both of your mutual growth. That's why you don't choose the master. The master actually always chooses, through his and her radiation, those that are drawn into that divine orbit. So the master is always with you, and you are always with the master. Can you have more than one master? Well, ultimately, there's only one master, and that's God. Okay? So look at it like, for example, you have a family, you have a father, you have a brother, you have an uncle, you have nephews, and your relationship is slightly different with each one. But it was the father that gave you life, okay? So that one has the greatest respect and honor in the pecking order of relationships. And in a similar matter, similar manner of masters, you will have a major master, a lord of a particular ray of influence, which birthed your essence as an individualized soul. But under that master, you'll have many departmental heads, so to speak, that are initiates and other degrees of adepts that will work with you from time to time, sort of like you have a principal that is presiding over a university, for example. And then you'll have the other teachers that are also master professors and teachers in their various subjects. And so you'll study in different ones. So most of us have studied with all of the master teachers at some time or another. We've all been disciples of Muhammad and disciples of Jesus and disciples of Krishna and Rama and Zarathustra and Guru Nanak and the spiritual travelers, such as those I've just mentioned, and all of them, and Moses, and whoever you can think of in name, probably, if you have a strong affinity to that particular teacher or path, you have been a disciple on that path. So why aren't you liberated, if that's so? Well, what makes you think you're not liberated? What evidence can you draw forth that you're not and have always been liberated? You see, that's the thing. We're on a journey without distance from a place in highest truth we've never left. Go figure. But we're playing the drama of time and space, okay? So you have to dance to the tune that's played. And right now, the tune being played is your name and your form and your particular role that you're enacting right now on the stage of your life. So it's to take that particular embodiment and make it the nexus point through which all of your embodiments ascend in full enlightenment. That's the effect of one who has expanded their aura of influence and has come into the unified field within this holographic universe to where that energy signature can activate and ascend every one of its fractals within the time-space holographic continuum. In other words, you can bring it all home through your embodiment this time around. Why is that? It's simply what has been extended to us as an opportunity through grace. So you want to build in more and more attunement to God. To have attunement with God, you need to look at the things in your life that build a sense of energy and the things that waste your time and deplete and drain your energy. Things that are not conducive to your spiritual life enhancement drain and deplete your energy. Pay attention to what they are. Certain music, for example, will irritate you. Turn it off. It's draining your energy. Certain foods will make you feel sluggish or will make you feel sleepy or you won't digest them. You'll have lots of gas. That's a sign that you're not digesting your food. Look at what you're eating. Pay attention to the feedback of your body. The body should be quiet, shouldn't make lots of sounds. The body should be something that you can literally lose sight of, completely forget. Yogis have very little body consciousness. They don't live in body consciousness. They live in expanded awareness. Discern the difference between the awareness of the energy that is inside you, flowing through your body, and that enchilada that you look at when you look in the, you know, you comb your hair and you put clothes on it. Pay attention to the feedback of what you intake through your senses. If you notice certain things that you're watching on TV cause a depression of your energy, which is to lose vibration, to lose a sense of beauty and divinity. For example, these negative crime shows, and there's so many really verbally and mentally and visually assaulting images that you're better off throwing that television or that computer in the garbage if you can't exercise more discernment in what you put your eyes on. And begin to select better food for yourself. Know that everything you intake through your senses is food that builds your mind, the quality of your consciousness, and that you wear as an aura and influence. Now, a master can extend the aura to protect an entire neighborhood. In fact, in the Vedic times, they always tried to have at least one saint, one saint in their village. You know, they would really try to look for evidences of divinity nearby, because they knew that if they lived in the proximity of a saint, their home would be protected from floods and ravages and all sorts of things. So a master has a tremendous influence in their aura, and forget master, a highly evolved soul that has heart coherency can protect a whole area from earthquakes and floods and tornadoes and disasters, and can extend that aura out and send healing. That's how long-distance healing takes place. We have that example with the beautiful soul Bratso and his mentor, Ivica. You don't have to even be in the same room with Bratso. You can just think of him, and his healing energy can flow into you and bring you balance. Just having one of the DVDs, Bratso DVDs, or his book, you know, that was written by Angelica Whitecliff, just to put that on a part of your body that hurts, relieves the pain. Why is that? The aura of influence. And the fact that you had the wit and the faith and the confidence that you would receive help if you applied, you know, his energy to whatever was hurting you. And that's just one of many examples. The same thing with Sai Baba, the same thing with the spiritual travelers. It's where you basically can release your faith and confidence. And you find that after a while, all the masters are one. They're just different cookie cutter shapes of the same sweet cookie dough. And you just pick the one that is pleasant to you and sweet to you. But know that God is one, the divine is one, and that as you keep company with that presence, that divine presence begins to displace all of the aberrations and the pain and the infirmities and the things that have been distorted with pure, luminous, immortal light until your whole being is flushed through and through and you become an immortalized, resurrected, ascended being yourself. So, Sai Baba's aura, for example, extends beyond the planet into the cosmic levels so that he literally inhabits the three planes of existence, the earth worlds, the mid-worlds or mid-heavens, the subtle planes, and the heavenly realms. Now that is what is called a cosmic individuality with a capital I. That's a cosmic avatar or a cosmic Christ. And again, there are levels of the Christ consciousness and levels of the God consciousness, so you don't have a static position here. You have one, again, that is continually expanding and expanding and is ever more inclusive. So the divine avatar is always attractive and draws souls to it like a magnet. And that is the state referred to also by Sri Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita as the sage, by doing nothing, accomplishes all things. That's when there is no doer present. There is just simply the being. So everything that you say, think, and do that increases your divine connection and your awareness of beauty, loving compassion, peace, joy, equanimity, all of these things of higher consciousness go into creating your powerful auric field of influence. And the more you fill your life with the things of spirit and with divine beauty, the more all else is drawn into your orbit that is abundantly life-giving and joy-enhancing. So that's the state in which all things come to you, which Jesus referred to when he said, "Seek ye first the kingdom of heaven and its righteousness, and then all things will be added unto you." That's what he was speaking about. So you don't have to think about making money or being successful or anything. Once you have filled yourself with God, everything comes to serve the divine. Everything wants to be in service to the divine beloved. Now, all of this bodily secretions of a saint or an advanced yogi or a master avatar is curative. For example, Jesus healed and restored the blind man's sight with his saliva. And that was only one of many, many, many countless stories. In fact, it said in the Gospel of John that if all of the stories about all of the things that Jesus said and did and taught and all of the miracles were recorded, there would not be room on this planet to contain all of the books. So that's just, you know, one example of how Jesus used saliva and a little bit of soil and made a mud pack and applied it to this blind man's eyes, and he could see. Jesus breathed. He breathed on his disciples and filled them with the power of the Holy Spirit. So his breath was full of the Ruach HaKadosh, the breath, the living breath spirit of the Most High God, was his own breath, which is your breath too, when all of the other congestion has been cleared out. So Jesus, who had no sin and no karma, became the scapegoat upon which all of the dirt and ugliness and sin and illness, infirmity, suffering, everything you could think of was loaded on him. And he took it and absolved it so that you could inherit immortal life now. You could be done with it. You could step free through his grace, through his authority, through his power, through his gift. You could come under his sponsorship. You could be absorbed into his auric field, and he'd carry you home like the bridegroom carries the bride across the threshold. And that's the whole idea. That's the whole idea. Tuck up to him, tuck right into the folds of his mantle, and let him swoop you up into his arms and carry you home. Done deal. You know, why sweat the small stuff? So the presence of the Lord Jesus, the Christ, was so powerful that infirmity, every disease, every single thing that was not divine had to leave his presence. Everyone was healed. Everyone was delivered of bondage, affliction, suffering, and every form of aberration. Every single person was healed. Not only Jesus, but later his disciples, Paul and Silas and Peter, just their shadows falling on someone was enough to heal everyone, or a touch of their handkerchief or their apron. So that's the power that we have also. And every element of nature had to immediately obey the word of Jesus and his command. And it was the same with Sai Baba. Same thing. Same tremendous power and command in the word. So Jesus set the example by extending his aura and influence over all of us as his brothers and sisters, so that we could do these things and even greater things. Why? Because he said he was going back to the Father. What did that mean? It meant that he took his physical form out of the visible arena, like Sai Baba did too, so that he could guide us from within by his Holy Spirit, and we could be self-realized and self-actualized and not just simply follow someone else. That was his gift and Sai Baba's gift as well. So Jesus said in the Course of Miracles, if you want to be like me, I'll help you. If you want to be different, I will wait until you change your mind. And you will change your mind. I love that statement. So the stories of healings and miraculous occurrences are found in every religion and spiritual tradition because they all have one source. They all have one source. God is one. And then man made up religions and saw a difference in the different sons and daughters of God. But the one Spirit, the one divine Spirit, is appearing as the many and is appearing undiluted by ego and human lower self in the full avatar. That's the one time you can see the closest representation of God is in a full avatar. And they're rare. Our chance to be on the earth with Satya Sai Baba is a great, 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 an incredibly rare privilege. So the gaze, the mere sight, or look, or the slightest touch that's exchanged with a great soul or master, and especially an avatar, will leave an indelible imprint on one's energy field for eternity. It's ineradicable. You can look in a person's aura, I can when I look at people, and see that they've been with Krishna and Rama or Jesus or this one or that one. So any one of these interactions with the avatar, the great way-shower, the great being, whether it's in a dream, a vision and meditation, or in your waking state, will totally cleanse, remove all sin, transform, and assure one's spiritual liberation. That is huge. So pay attention. If you've ever had a dream of Jesus Christ or Sai Baba or Krishna or the Divine Mother or any one of them, just receive that fullness that they have come to impart to you. Their abilities are beyond comprehension. For example, Shirdi Sai Baba turned a coconut offered to him into a son, S-O-N, in the womb of a 60-year-old woman. Yes. And Satya Sai Baba turned a cancerous tumor into a healthy pregnancy of a woman from the West who came to see him to be cured of cancer. She went back pregnant with a child and delivered a healthy baby. Now, both of these women conceived by the mere glance of the avatar. That's truly immaculate conception. Sai Baba raised my good friend Walter Cowan from the dead after he had been stuffed with cotton and put in the morgue for 4 hours. And he healed his kidneys at the same time of diabetes and his fear of death, and also restored his hair from gray to dark. And all he did was walk into the morgue, pull back the sheet, and say, "Cowan, get up!" But Jesus did the same thing when he went into the little girl. He looked at her and said, "Talita kumi, little girl, arise." Same thing. So death, the illusion of death, cannot stay in the presence of the spirit of life. The life-giving spirit is the one that will lead you from death to immortality, from darkness to light, from the dream of birth and death, to your ongoing, ever-present oneness within the heart of all existence. So the only thing that stands in the way of our cultivating a greater and more expansive aura of influence is the consciousness clutter that we have allowed to consume our mind space, our consciousness space, our energy field. And we need to be cultivating and increasing our energy through greater connection with the divine. Again, you'll notice that your energy is leaked through holes in your aura. Vital energy is leaked and drained and depleted by any form of negative outburst, negative speech, anger, a critical spirit, negative words, hateful words. Any of that will cause little leaks in your aura. Sai Baba said that the human body is like a pot with 9 holes. So we have to learn how to channel all of that energy up into the mouth of the pot and close off and seal those leaking holes, which would be entrances into lower states of consciousness that pull us into the bardos, the states of separative states of being that are less than divine wholeness. We have to find where we're leaking in our lives, where we are out of control with our emotions and our thinking and our behavior, and exert some conscious selectivity in what we get involved with and engage and express. Likewise, physical and psychic and psychological abuse and violent acts that you've experienced or witnessed or participated in, and every form of trauma, all of that needs to be cleared and forgiven and released. And some need to have professional assistance in identifying and clearing those areas and mending those holes in the aura. Of course, like I said, if you've been in the presence of Sai Baba or a master teacher or John Roger, you don't need to bother with that, because when you are the responsibility of a master who has assumed verbally an agreement to take you home to God, and they have the ability to actually do that, they take care of you. They're like the mother that cleans the baby up, changes the diaper. They don't need to be told that the diaper needs to be changed. They take care of business. When you're a disciple of a real master, a real bona fide master, Lord Jesus Christ, Satya Sai Baba, my teacher John Roger, any of the real, true, bona fide, so-called, quote, perfect masters, they will take care of all of these lesser things, and you don't have to bother your head about them. Just stay connected. That's your dharma. Stay connected to the juice. Think of yourself as like a cell phone. You know, you got to keep that battery charged. So you got to plug in to the juice, the outlet, the power drive, which is your spiritual practice, your meditation, your contemplation, your repeating the name of the Lord, your doing your soul tone, you're practicing observing and loving and serving in your daily activity, all of that will recharge your battery. Every thought of God will recharge your battery. Every hymn you sing, every praise song, everything that you participate in to draw closer and nearer and dearer to God is going to boost your energy and keep you clear. So your job is to just keep plugged in and keep connected. And your wake-up call is when you notice your energy dropping, when you feel drained, when you feel burned out, when you feel frazzled, when you feel like the stress load is about ready to do you in. Hello, leaky aura, plug in. So your leaky aura is also the cause of most infectious diseases getting root in you, and also parasitic infection. It's like everything in nature, when that entity begins the process of dissolution and decline, it gets invaded by parasites, which have the job of trying to disincorporate that body or that spirit in that body. So psychic and psychological disorders are mostly attributed to openings in the aura that allow, you know, invasive elements to enter the field that don't belong there. So your energy field is also like a protective shield that you need to keep it, you know, strong and fortified around you. You do that by constantly bringing in light, surrounding yourself with layers of light, visualizing the light as a bubble around you, doing that golden infusion that we started the seminar tonight with, all of that. And visualize it just closing and sealing any areas that need to be closed and healed. And ask Jesus to help you, ask Sai Baba to help you, ask John Roger, the mystical travelers, to help you. That's their job. That's their duty. They will. They'll do that. But you have to ask, because they're not going to violate your private space without your invitation. Unless, of course, you've already made an agreement and you are their accepted disciple, then it's a different thing. But, you know, if you haven't formed that kind of relationship and commitment yet, you have to ask. And even if you have, it's a good idea to ask. So shamans and energy healers are trained to work in the areas of clearing your aura and energies and imprints in the auric field, as are some counselors and mystics and healthcare, I would say alternative healthcare practitioners. So there's many people out there that have, they use muscle testing and pendulums and shamanic techniques to remove patterns that aren't serving your highest good. But your job, you know, in the meantime, is to remove and replace habits that clutter your life and do nothing to enhance the quality of your life. And you know, common things that we reach for when we need energy don't really give us energy. You know, things like energy drinks and sweets and coffee and supplements and, you know, so forth, drinks or hanging out with our friends or, you know, anything like that really doesn't recharge us. It distracts us, makes us feel better for the moment, but it doesn't actually build in any energy. You have to go to your God connection if you want greater energy. And you need to let God have some wiggle room in your life to manage that stress. Stress lets you know that you're trying to, you know, let your ego handle things instead of the Lord. So just see that as feedback and course correct. And pick the best thing for yourself, the best things that bring you the nearest and the dearest and the clearest quality of divine life that you can possibly access. And that's it. That's the task. Practicing ongoing awareness, keeping connected, and course correcting, and constantly upgrading the quality of what you import into your energy and thus into your life. And pretty soon you also will have an aura that can wrap around the planet and bring blessings and healing and miracles wherever you go. In fact, some of you may be doing that already. Why don't you have a look and see? And remember to give the glory to God and not to your personal self. So let's take a deep breath and go out chanting. on I, Hugh. Deep breath. On I, Hugh. On I, Hugh. Just extend your auras out in a blessing of golden effulgent light from the very heart of the divine to all that lives. May all the beings of all the worlds have peace and happiness. Adonai.